الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أفتؤمنون ببعض الكتاب وتكفرون ببعض فما جزاء من يفعل ذلك منكم إلا خزي في الحياة الدنيا ويوم القيامة يردون إلى أشد العذاب وما الله بغافل عما تعملون صدق الله العظيم. Ulama e Kiram, most respected brothers and also our sisters who may be listening over the receivers. The heart of every Muslim throughout the world is suffering spiritual pain today because of the bombs which are raining upon a Muslim state. Even if it was not a Muslim state, if bombs are raining, missiles are being fired upon non-Muslim women, children, innocent civilians, then too we should feel the same pain. So how much more pain we should feel when those bombs are raining upon our brothers and sisters, whether it's in Palestine, whether it's in Iraq, or any other part of the world. But since we know that at present it is Iraq which is the target of these shaitans, so every bomb that falls there should be falling on our hearts. There just cannot be justification for sins or for indulgence in those kinds of pleasures which are displeasing to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala and His Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. When this is the condition of the Muslim Ummah, when we are finding ourselves at the weakest end, when anybody can take any decision with regards to us and we have no way of defending, then we can just imagine what is our condition. There is no doubt that very, very difficult and trying times came over the Sahaba-e-Kiram radiallahu anhu ajma'in. They were tested to the maximum. Rasul-e-Pak was amongst them. It was not that he had passed away. Whose du'as could have been more powerful and stronger than the du'as of Rasulullah? But yet, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala tested them. However, in their tests and trials also, they had that yaqeen at heart, that if Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is saying that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will give you success and victory, then it will come. They had that yaqeen. Why? Because they firmly believed that whatever Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam told is the truth and nothing but the truth. Their part of the contract was to do that which Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam ordered them to do. So if he ordered them salat, you will find salat in the life of every sahabi. If he ordered them zakat, then zakat you will find in the life of anyone who had that amount of wealth on which zakat was applicable and farz. If it was a question of fasting, then there was not one sahabi or companion of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam you will find who was violating this law that in the month of Ramadan he is eating and drinking openly, unconcerned about what people are going to say, or not even concerned about Allah Ta'ala. If Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam prohibited, or the Quran Sharif prohibited drinking, then those who were addicted to wine and drink, it was like water, like how we drink water. But so many times you must have heard that when the hukam came, that now it is totally forbidden and prohibited, then that which was in the jar did not come into the tumbler, and that which was in the tumbler did not come to the lips, and that which was even in the mouth, they spat it out. That's the kind of yaqeen they had. If Shariat prohibited adultery, fornication, then you will never find indulgence openly in this type of sin. This is what this ayat I have been talking about for many Jummas. The Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala says, أَفَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعْضِ الْكِتَابِ وَتَكْفُرُونَ بِبَعْضِ. Talking about the Bani Israel, that they too were given different laws and different ahkam and different instructions and commands. But what they did is exactly what we are doing. That any law which suits our taste and our whim and fancy, then we are prepared to implement. But those laws of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala which go against our desires, against the desires of our ego and nafs and our passions, then we reject that, no matter how loud and clear it may be in the Quran Sharif and in the hadiths of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. But we will reject it. That means we will not act upon it. Therefore the Quran Sharif warns us. This incident that Allah Ta'ala discusses about the Bani Israel is actually a warning for us. That they did the same thing, that they took those laws which suited them and others they rejected. So Allah Ta'ala says, أَفَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعْضِ الْكِتَابِ وَتَكْفُرُونَ بِبَعْضِ. Because we have a different audience here today. That do you then believe in some sections of the Quran Sharif or Kitab, for them that was the Kitab, but we are talking about the Quran Sharif now. That it will be applicable to us, the same thing. أَفَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعْضِ الْكِتَابِ وَتَكْفُرُونَ بِبَعْضِ. They were told, so then do you accept and you have iman and belief in some sections of the book and you reject or you disobey Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala when it comes to the other laws of Allah and His Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So Allah Ta'ala says, whenever a community amongst whom a prophet has been sent, when they do this, that from the book they choose that which suits them, and they reject those ahkam which do not suit them, then what else is the punishment for such kind of people, except, I'm not giving you the translation of the ayat, or I'm not giving you the exact tafsir, I'm just explaining to you, that then what else is the punishment, illa khizyun fil hayati dunya, except that they get disgrace in this world. Khizyun fil hayati dunya, disgrace, embarrassment, shame, humiliation in this world. That is the natural consequence of rejecting certain teachings of Allah and His Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam and just accepting some of the teachings. And then in the akhirat, azab alim or shadeed. So we have to look in the light of this ayat of the Quran Sharif, as I've been repeatedly saying, that is this not our condition also? How many laws of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala do we have in our lives? The major fundamental thing which is the salat, that itself we do not have in 80% of the ummah. 80% of the ummah does not have 5 times salat, and this is no exaggeration. At the most, after all the effort that is being made with the madrasas and the darul ulooms and the tablighi jamaat and the khanqas and the mashayikh and the ulama-i haq and the Muslim organizations, we will say that they must have come down to 70%. But go down, because we are only looking at South Africa, or we look in our own locality, or look at in our own area. But travel out and see in some countries where 90% of the population is Muslim, and see what is the condition of the 5 times salat. And Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala has mentioned Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has mentioned very clearly that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala takes no responsibility for such people who do not have salat in their lives. He doesn't take this, he doesn't care what happens to them after that. And so many times I have repeated this, that it is just the good fortune of us that many jurists differed with regards to the interpretation of that hadith of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, in which he said that the person who forgoes his salat, he has committed kufr. That is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said, that he has committed kufr. That means he is out of the pale of Islam if he forgoes one salat without any valid reason, then he has committed kufr. But because of this difference of opinion, they said that no, this kufr means that the person is not a perfect Muslim, and they saved our skin. But Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah alayhi, whose fatwa or whose rulings Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jilani rahmatullah alayhi and others follow, and many Imams of Madina Sharif and others are also Hanbalis and throughout the world, then their ruling is still the same, that it is in reality kufr. That the person has committed kufr, and they say that person's nikah is invalid, the person's children will be born illegitimate, if the person dies, do not bury him in a Muslim graveyard. Now just imagine if that rule had to apply to us, where would we have been? So that they saved our skin by the means of the fatwa. But in reality, if we have to look, then this is the haqiqat, that if we have to look at the international Muslim community, then I'm just talking about this one fundamental pillar. How much do we have in the lives? And look at those same countries which have experienced wars in the past, and those same countries which have gone through tremendous amount of suffering and pain and humiliation, still how much of it has come into their lives. Now that is just one aspect. But look at all the other things which have been mentioned in the Quran Sharif and the hadiths of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. We just do not find it. So therefore we should not feel satisfied with the level of our iman and say that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, the promises that He made to the Muslims will be fulfilled because we are Muslims. We have to see whether we are Muslims in the true sense of the word. Indeed our names are Muslim names. Indeed we were born in Muslim homes. But look at our lives and look at in our homes how much of Islam is there. In our walimas, in our marriages, in everything. And I gave quite a few examples in the talks over the past Jummas, in which I mentioned the same ayat, and I said that look at our business transactions also. How much of us are involved in the taking and the giving of interest. And yet that is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has cursed. And Rasulullah Paak sallallahu alayhi wa said that the doom of my ummah is when they will take interest openly and they will and when they will indulge in zina and fornication openly. So that's the doom of my ummah. And he said, my ummah will live a very nice and a pleasant and a happy life until there is no increase in the ummah of illegitimate children. When there are incidents of illegitimate children being born excessively in the ummah, then Allah Ta'ala will send calamities upon them. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, he will take the fear of yours out of the heart of your enemies when you are going to breach your trust, when you're going to break your promises, when you are going to violate those agreements, then after that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, this is what He will do. And many times you have also heard that Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has predicted that there will be large scale murders, killings, massacres, when there will be an increase in zina in the ummah. And how many times again I have mentioned this, that many of us so called pious, righteous people, who people look at as righteous and pious, that because we have our garb as Islamic garb and because we frequent the masjids, so then we will say that I don't drink, I don't gamble, I don't commit adultery and fornication. But day and night we are watching that filth on the television screens. Zina comes into our sitting room, into our lounge, into our bedroom, and now in our offices and in every part of our home. Abundant number of times there's zina upon zina. Oh, we are committing zina of the eyes, looking all around, all that is haram. And then we say that we want Allah Ta'ala's rahmat and those promises of Allah will be fulfilled. Yes, it will be fulfilled, but did we fulfill our part of the contract? That is the essential thing. So if you look at the hadiths of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, we will find that he has attributed the conditions and even the Quran Sharif to the condition of the Muslim ummah. Kufr and Islam can survive. If there is a Muslim state and there is kufr there, that kufr can survive. We have had many incidents in the history where in Muslim governments, Christians, Jews, the kuffar, the mushrikeen, they were allowed to carry on with their ibadat as long as they paid the tax and they did not violate those laws which were such that it would have made them become guilty of some offense according to that Islamic system of government. It's a wide subject, I'm not going into the details, but like that they were allowed to stay and the Muslim governments took care of their property, their wealth was secured, they were given guarantee that the honor and dignity will be respected. So kufr can survive, but when there's injustice, then those governments don't survive. When there's injustice, then those governments don't survive. Whether it is injustice in a Muslim country or injustice in a non-Muslim country, but the time will come when there will be a revolution, as we saw in our own country. So the time came, there was a turnaround. So in the same way, if you have to look at the Muslim countries today, then take Iraq itself. How much of injustice was done there? How much of injustice? Those who know history and those who have been there, and those who have met the people living there, they know what was done to them. how many ulama and how many sulaha and how many pious and righteous people and those who voiced their opinion against the unjust government. Their lives were taken. We do not know where they went. Their families were suffering. They had no news of those where the husband has gone or the brother has gone or the father has gone. There's so many incidents. Nevertheless, after that azab came in whichever form it came, but it came. Then Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala gave a long period of time. So what was the duty of that government after that? To be just, to be fair, to go out of its way, to win back the confidence and the faith and the trust of the people, and to care for their poor and the needy and all the rest of it. Instead, even that exchange that they had, that the oil that you sell, then whatever income is received, you must use it for these type of purposes. Most of it again went back to those kings and their elite guards and all those other desires of theirs which had to be fulfilled. The money went back to the same thing, or it was deposited outside. So Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala sends another war. Now what I want to draw your attention to is this, that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, I mentioned last night too in the majlis, that Rasulullah Paak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in the sixth year he sent letters to the kings and rulers. Amongst those letters that he sent, one was to Kisra, the Persian ruler. That was what those were the two major empires at that time, the Persian Empire and the Roman Empire, as we have the superpowers today. So he sent one letter with Hazrat Huzafa Sahmi radiallahu ta'ala to Kisra. So when Kisra, the ruler of Persia, or the emperor of Persia, when he received the letter of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, this is what he did with his letter, he tore it up. So that slave of mine, he has the audacity to write to me. Na'uzu billahi min zalik. He called Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam a slave, and he says he has the audacity to write to me. So as a result, what he did, he ordered his governor of from Yemen, he said that you send two people over to Medina Sharif and have him arrested and brought over to me. It's a long story, but that is the crux of it. So he sent two people over. Now Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, when these two people reached, they Allah Ta'ala put such awe and fear into their hearts that they couldn't even say really what they had come for. Nevertheless, after that, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam told them, well, come tomorrow. But before that, one incident took place. My brothers who are shaving their beards, please don't feel offended. This is something that is in the hadiths. And I keep on saying that keeping a beard just does not make a person pious and very God-fearing and maqbool in the law. It doesn't mean if the person just keeps a beard, then he's a great wali of Allah Ta'ala. It is one of the things that is required. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam turned his face away and he expressed great displeasure. And he said, why have you done this? He said, our king has ordered us we must shave. He said, but my Rabb has ordered me that I must keep the beard. Now Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, he was hurt, he was upset that this is happening. And yet those people were non-Muslims, they were not even believers. But you can see the hurt that he felt. And I mentioned that if you have to look at the entire military of Iraq, and look at the entire cabinet of Iraq, and look at the entire government of Iraq, and if you find one person with this sunnah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, then you are lucky. How much of hurt and injury and pain it must be causing to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasalam, that those who are claiming to be ummatis of his, followers of his, is this not of a tu'minuna bi ba'dil kitab wa takfuruna bi ba'd? Acceptance of certain hukams and rejection of others. Instead of saying, yes, indeed it is our weakness, make dua that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give me the tawfiq to keep it. What will we say? We'll say, you are still concerned about these trivial things when war is carrying on there. You're still concerned about trivial things like making namaz 5 times a day when bombs are raining there. Brothers, but these are the things which are bringing about these type of conditions. And I am not saying it, it is in the hadiths, you can look for it, in the Quran Sharif, everywhere Allah Ta'ala has mentioned it. So whatever has happened, but then what is our duty? That whenever there is a calamity, whenever there is a disaster, whenever there is an azab, or whether it is a test, we do not know. At that time it is not our duty, or it is not our function, to sit and pick out at individuals, or say that this is a weakness, so therefore it is an azab of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala and to hell with them, na'uzu billah. That is not a Muslim's way of life. A Muslim must be hurt, deeply hurt, irrespective of what that person was doing. Even if he was committing zina, even if they were shaving their beards, even if they were committing all kinds of haram actions and deeds, even if there were no namazes in their lives. But who knows, with these bombs falling, their hearts would get shaken up and they will raise their hands and say, oh Allah, whatever sins I committed in all my life, forgive us. And now we pledge that we will not return to those sins. then just that one sincere tawbah and istighfar will make them the walis of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. And if we are going to keep on condemning them, then we will be sinful. Yes, as a general talk, when we talk about general Muslim ummah, then we can mention these things. But not as individuals, that you pick out on an individual and you tell him that you are doomed. So these are things, that these are conditions. Now what I want to get across to you very clearly is this. That if you have to look at the lives of the companions of the Sahaba Ikram radiallahu ta'ala anhum ajma'een, when Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam came amongst them, there was no question of them being totally unable to find food for themselves, or they had no necessities that could be easily obtainable. According to their conditions, whatever their conditions were, they had food, they had clothes, they had shelter. In their own way, they had the needs. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam did not come amongst them just to improve their economic condition, just to improve the quality of their food, just to improve the quality of their clothing and dressing and the shelter. That was not his function. Yes, when the person is going to follow Islam, when he's going to obey Allah and his Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasalam, then Allah ta'ala will give them governments, he will give them kingdoms, he will give them the land, he will give them everything. Then everything will improve also. But here, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, if we look at his companions, then we will find that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, he invited them towards Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. He invited them towards the Quran. He invited them towards his way of life. And when they followed that, now it's a vast subject, but in the short time I just give you some pointers. But in their lives, when they accepted this, then you will find four things very, very glaring. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's companions, in the beginning, one or two or few here and few, they accepted Islam. But after they accepted Islam, then all kinds of troubles and calamity and tests and trials came upon them. Then he was ordered to take them and go away to Madina Sharif. And now if you have to look at the people of Madina Sharif, where the Islamic government was established, that in the life of all his companions, you will find four things very, very glaring. One is that they had 100% yaqeen and faith that whatever Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said is the truth and nothing but the truth. Even when they were digging the trench, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had stones tied on his belly. And at that time he was digging the trench. But when he predicted that these kingdoms will fall at your feet, and he saw it in the sparks when he was knocking that boulder. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, not one companion said, Ya Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasalam, you have got stones on your belly, we've got stones on our belly, we are suffering starvation and poverty, and you are talking about the Syrian government, and you're talking about the Persian Empire and the Roman Empire and everything falling at our feet. They had absolutely no doubt that it is going to happen, provided they stay steadfast on this deen of Allah and his Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasalam. So their yaqeen was in everything. If he said that if you commit these sins, then this is what is going to happen, then they had no doubt that in the commission of those sins, that is what is going to happen. If he said that if you are going to indulge in adultery and fornication and shameless deeds and actions, then Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will cause large amount of deaths and massacre and such kind of diseases and sicknesses which your forefathers never even heard of. Our forefathers, what kind of diseases and sicknesses they used to suffer? The kind of diseases which could be cured with the tuppenny, halfpenny, as they used to call them in those days, coin. That's just a few cents worth of medication and they should get cured. Now with the AIDS problem, they haven't even come to any grips, and already they say there's some kind of pneumonia that is surfacing somewhere in the world, and it will be worse. When that virus spreads, it will be worse than even AIDS. Now this is what is going to carry on, because promiscuity and shamelessness and adultery and fornication is so rife. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's companion, this is first thing. Second thing, you will find that each and every one of them was obedient to Allah and his Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasallam. They rejected and shunned everything that was prohibited by Allah and his Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And accidentally, if they committed a sin, so much they cried, that even the angels would have wept at their crying and said, hold on now, you have cried enough, Allah has forgiven you. That is the kind of feeling they should have after having committed some sin accidentally. Then you will find that they were more concerned about the akhirah than this world. That they are concerned, that they considered this world to be a means of getting to the akhirah. So therefore they must make their actions such that they will be beneficial to them in this world and the akhirah. And the fourth thing was this, that for this to come in the ummah, they made sacrifices. Now when they did this, Allah Ta'ala gave them two great powers. One was that their lives now became a means of attraction towards the deen of Allah Ta'ala. This same Iraq was not a Muslim state. Egypt was not a Muslim state. Morocco was not a Muslim state. Indonesia and all these other places where you find large populations of Muslims, in Africa and all other parts of the world, these were not Muslim states. In fact, some of them were anti-Islam and such enemies of the Muslims that we cannot even imagine. Iran and all these places, that time there was no Islam there. They were enemies of the Muslims. But when these Sahaba-e-Kiram went to these places, then within a short period of time, large communities accepted Islam. Now what was that because of? Was it because of the sword? Did they force them to accept Islam? Islam was la ikraha fid din. There was no question of compulsion. Then what it was that we find all these countries and states, we call them Muslim states today, because of that character, the akhlaq, the nobility, the sincerity, the charity, the ibadat, the zikr, the tilawat, the care, the consideration, the compassion, the feeling that they showed for the people, the justice with which they dealt with people, whether they were Muslims or non-Muslims. All these were the causes that thousands of people accepted Islam until the whole state became a Muslim state. Now that is the condition, that is what was one of the effect of their lives. And the second effect was this, that whichever mighty, powerful force came against them and said that we are not going to accept Islam, we are neither going to pay any tax and stay under the Muslim government's conditions, we are going to fight against you. Then even though they may have been small in numbers, but they had that yaqeen that because we are obedient to Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, victory will come. Therefore we find that within a short period of time, all those massive empires fell at their feet. What is our condition today? That whatever we had also is also gone. And these states which they have divided today, and they call themselves Muslim states, which state we can say has got laws that are of Islam, full implementation of all Islamic laws? They will cut a hand here somewhere and they will do something here and something there. But when it comes to their lives and when you look at their government and when you look at the injustice, then it is unreal and unbelievable. So this war that came in 91, after that we had 11 or 12 years. Now those Sahaba-e-Kiram radiallahu anhum ajma'een, within a few months, thousands of their enemies accepted Islam and became Muslims. And that whole state became an Islamic state. Now here we will agree that there was a war with Iran, there was a war with all the other states that were around there. But in 11 years or 12 years, one Muslim state cannot win over the Muslim brothers and make them part of the one family, so that when America attacks again, at least the Muslim states around there are our brothers. I hope you are getting what I am saying. That Kuwait, we know that it was the same Saddam, that whether it was America that set him up or whoever set him up, but he went into Kuwait. And the damage and the destruction that was caused, everybody knows about it. And then came that same liberator America, and they liberated them. Now what happened? What kind of a liberation that was? The liberation was such that all the Kuwaitis, or the majority of them, they began worshipping the old Bush, that he is our liberator. Now even though there had been a war with Iraq, but the Kuwaitis, who were the Muslims, Muslim brothers, but they did not have that kind of realization that these are our Muslim brothers. Never mind, they fought with us. Afterwards again we got back our land. Now they had 9 or 11 years or 11 or 12 years in which to patch up their differences and say that never mind, we have realized what has happened. And we saw that how these forces come in, they destroy us, and then they bring about a reconstruction of our country, promoting their wealth and promoting their companies, as it is happening already, that in Iraq, before even the bombs fell, the construction companies were being given orders of reconstruction of Iraq. So if the Sahaba-e-Kiram radiallahu anhum ajma'een, if they could have won over their enemies, those who were fighting against them, all this countries, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and this side, Egypt, and all these countries, they were all enemies of Islam and enemies of the Muslims. But if the Muslims could have, the Sahabas could have won them over, then made them into one brotherhood, that if one part of the body feels the pain, the entire ummah feels, the whole body feels the pain. So if one part of the ummah feels the pain, the entire ummah feels the pain. Here 11 years have gone, and all the years before that, since they were carved up, so many years have gone, but yet one country cannot win over, or say that all of us who are around this in the Middle East, all of us are one brotherhood. We are Muslims. We are believers in Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Let us forget our differences and unite on the basis of Deen and Sharia and Iman. We just do not find that. In fact, more and more enmity and hatred was being created, and as a result today, when Iraq is attacked, then those same Muslim states are giving them all logistical support, and some is giving ground support, and some are giving them military support, and some are giving them all other kinds of support, and the Muslim Ummah is joining hands with those enemies to destroy another Muslim state again. Like the hypocrites and the munafiqs, that when they used to read the kalima, they used to read it loudly, La ilaha illallah, but afterwards they used to aid and help and support those who were the enemies of Islam. Allah Ta'ala must give them that realization. And on the other hand, in our country, this is our duty, that we too must take lessons, that when we are going to accept certain parts of the teachings of the Quran and Sunnah and reject others, then these are the type of things that can befall any country. It's not necessary that it is only happening there. May Allah Ta'ala give us all the tawfiq of amal, but we must increase our du'as, restrain ourselves from haram, and this is not a time, there's no justification for anybody to be indulging in sins at a time when his Muslim... Imagine if a person is told that your father is dying in the hospital, your beloved wife is dying in the hospital, she's got cancer, or your children, your beloved child, he is dying of this sickness or that illness, or he has been shot and he is on the verge of death. Now at that time we say, no, but there's a very nice program on TV which I'm addicted to, so first I must see that and then I'll come back. Or there is a cricket match that is taking place, and there is a final or semi-final or whatever it is, so first I must satisfy myself, I have to go and jump and dance and sing there a little bit first, and then I will make sure that I'm taking care of my brother and sister and my father. What would be our reaction? Now imagine that the time that we are reading in the newspapers, when people are watching on television, and people are listening over the radios and so many different things, and we know what is happening, and at that time we say that no, how can we give up these pleasures of ours? Let them die, let them suffer because of the sins they are suffering. Na'uzu billahi min zalik. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us realization. Today was public holiday, therefore we have taken a few extra minutes. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq to increase our du'as, increase our ibadah, increase our tilawat. Because that's the only thing that we can do now which will save the day. If the whole ummah turns towards Allah ta'ala, makes rujoo and begs of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala can change the conditions as it changed in the past. It can even change today. We don't lose hope and faith and trust in Allah Ta'ala. Wa akhira da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.